You know, the news never fails to amaze me. A meth lab in a Walmart bathroom. Good gracious alive. Oh, yeah. And if you're going to walk along Wade Hampton in the road, you know, there's a little grass median over there. I know it's not sidewalk. But if you're going to walk Wade Hampton in the road, don't get mad at people who are driving in the road. You get off the road, walk on your little grass strip, whatever. There's a guy walking down Wade Hampton, and he was just, oh, so mad at people in the left, in the right-hand lane. Because they were, he was trying to walk, and they were passing him too close, I guess. You know, man. Anyway. But hey, it's a great day outside. Or it's getting there. You know, this morning when I was kind of sketching out what I was going to say, it was raining. And you know, it's getting nice. You know, there's the old saying about April showers bring me flowers. I think March rain brings nothing but mud. It's just nothing to soak it up. However, I've learned not to complain about the weather, because here in South Carolina, proved in just one day, if you wait a few hours, it'll change. Rain this morning, it's clearing up out there tonight. Tomorrow's supposed to be sunny and 70. So, welcome to the roller coaster of spring. Speaking of spring, I wonder if we're going to have one this year. Or will we go straight from winter to summer? You know, less than, what, a month ago we were 12 degrees or something, and now we're at 70 and 80 this week. I want to put my order in right now. I would like 8 weeks of 40-degree mornings, 70-degree afternoons, and it can start beginning next month. Don't we wish it was that easy? My name is Roger Metz, and I'd like to welcome you to another Saturday afternoon of Woods and Water, South Carolina, a radio show dedicated to helping you unplug and find something to do in our South Carolina outdoors. You can listen to this show right there on your FM dial at 94.5. You can go to the Conservative Talk 94.5 website, click the Listen Live link on the right-hand side of the page, or download the free Conservative Talk 94.5 app for your phone or tablet. You can also look at what Woods and Water SC has been up to on Facebook at /WoodsandWaterSC. Follow or tag your pictures on Instagram at #WoodsandWaterSCRadio. Or go to the website at woodsandwatersc.com to see more pictures and listen to the weekly podcasts. That's right. If you miss a live show, you can go to the website, click on the podcast tab, and find the show you missed or one you'd like to hear again. Nice thing about that is you can skip all the stuff you don't want to listen to. So, anyway, hey, we got a full calendar, so let's get right to it. 2015 Spartanburg Ducks Unlimited Oyster Roast in Spartanburg on Friday, March the 20th. Starts at 6 o'clock. Doors open at 6. Indigo Hall, 190 Ezel Street, Spartanburg, South Carolina. Single tickets, 50. Couples event, 80. Trey Sennon is your contact. If you want his telephone number, you can go to the... If you go to Ducks Unlimited South Carolina events, you can find these and you get more information there. Survival Series Primitive Shelter Building. This is going to be at Edisto Beach State Park on the 21st from 1 to 4. It says this special three-hour program will cover the methods of shelter building and allow participants to assist in creating a coastal-style lean-to. It'll be kind of fun to do if you're going to be at the beach in a few weeks. Need to pre-register? You can call the Edisto Beach State Park Learning Center. It's free with park admission. Closed-toed shoes, long pants, water, camera, and bug spray. Be a good way to spend a little few hours of the afternoon if you're going to be down at Edisto on the 21st. From the Lake Murray Times, we're going to have a Lake Murray Boating Safety Class March 21st, 2015. Start off this spring with a boating safety class taught by the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary on Saturday, March 21st from 8:30 to 5 p.m. at Flotilla Island. That's on Johnson Marina Road in Chapin. The course about boating safety is certified by the Department of Natural Resource, and graduates will be awarded the South Carolina Boater Education Card. If you didn't know, in South Carolina, boaters under 16 years of age are required by law to pass an approved boater education course before operating without adult supervision a personal watercraft or a boat powered by a motor with 15 horsepower or more. Course is $30 a person. Class size is limited, so you need to get in touch with them. Students under the age of 12 must be accompanied by an adult enrolled in the class. For more information or to register, contact Festus Birchfield at 803-240-4830 or email boatsafe@earthlink.net. Registration is also available online at www.register-ed.com events. Register, and then the event number is 56895. Says the boating course is designed for boaters of all ages and experience with an emphasis on recreational boating safety. And there are more. The Department of Natural Resources, if you go to their webpage, they have a long list of boater education courses available. And I've got those. I'll cover some more of those later on. Stool Mountain Day Hike. This is at Table Rock State Park, Pickens, South Carolina. Hike to the top of Stool Mountain to enjoy some excellent views and fascinating geology. This unique trip is approximately 4 miles round trip with some off-trail hiking and is rated strenuous. Guess that leaves me out. March 21st, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Registration's a week before, so that would be this weekend. You'll meet at the White Oaks Picnic Shelter. What to bring? Trail lunch, 2 liters of water, boots and shoes for rugged terrain. The NRA is having a Low Country Patriots Friends of NRA banquet. It's at Hilton Head Island Beach and Tennis Club Resort, 40 Folly Field Road, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. FONRA, we did those in Spartanburg for many, many years. They're a great banquet to go to, a great organization to support. If you've heard anything at all about the ATF regulations that came out the week before last and then got shelved or supposedly shelved this week, you know who came out and was a voice against all that? That's the NRA. Hope you'll make time to go in and participate in some of these banquets they've got coming up. Anyway, that's Thursday, March the 26th at 5:30 p.m. down in Hilton Head Island. Another Ducks Unlimited banquet at the University of South Carolina. It's going to take place at the Coop from 6:30 to 10. That's 1100 Key Road in Columbia. Tickets are $35. Online ticket sales end 3/25/15. They've got some numbers here for you to call if you need more information. Let's see. And going on, this is one I've been trying to get to for a couple of weeks because it fills up every year. It's the Women's Coastal Skills Clinic held at Hunting Island, South Carolina. It's April 10th through the 12th. And the little blurb here, join us for an exclusive outdoor experience designed just for women. This 3-day workshop will expand your knowledge of the low country while teaching useful skills along the way. Learn about the history of the lighthouse, birding, cast netting, salt marsh, kayaking, shells, fishing, and more. It's the perfect way to escape with your closest friends for a weekend you'll never forget. It's $210 a person. Register early by calling 843-838-7437. It's limited participation for ladies over 16 years of age. It is sleeping accommodations are your responsibility. They do have some places you can stay down there. But that's at Hunting Island. Great weekend for you ladies out there. And then a little off the chart here, but something that I really enjoy. It's the Marine Corps Air Station Beaufort Air Show 2015, April the 11th and 12th. They're going to have the list of performers is just endless, but they're going to have, they're going to have an Osprey demonstration, Harrier demonstration. They got some aerobatic pilots who are going to be flying. The big draw, of course, is the Blue Angels. That's the U.S. Navy demonstration team. That's April 11th and 12th. They do have some ticket packages for you if you want to be in, you know, shaded area or private restrooms or closer to the middle of the flight line, but general admission is free, and it's just a trip to Beaufort, but a gorgeous place to see an air show. And then finally today on our calendar events is the first annual South Carolina Department of Natural Resources Youth Sporting Clays Open. It's going to be Saturday, April the 18th. Registration is open through March 29th. The location is the new Palmetto Shooting Complex at the National Wild Turkey Federation headquarters in Edgefield. Who can come? It's open to students grades 6 through 12 who are members of a club or a school shooting team. If you don't know any more, if you want to know more about the school shooting team program, contact Ryan Bass at bassr@dnr.sc.gov. They're going to have divisions of senior varsity, junior varsity, intermediate, high school ladies, middle school ladies, and club division, senior varsity, junior, intermediate, high school, and middle school ladies. $20,000 in scholarships for seniors. And they're going to give away a bunch of shotguns. So get out there. There's your calendar. Get involved. Come back. We're going to talk about the Harry Hampton Fund and the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic. And as always, I'll be adding all that calendar to the Facebook page. You can go there and find out more details or where to look for changes. A week ago, I recorded a conversation with Jim Goller, who's the executive director of the Harry Hampton Memorial Wildlife Foundation Fund, about the upcoming Sportsman's Classic. I think you'll enjoy listening, and like me, there's always something to learn about. We are pleased to have with us on the phone today Jim Goller from Beaufort, South Carolina. He's the executive director of the Harry Hampton Foundation. Jim, how are you doing this morning?
I'm great, Roger. How are you?
We're doing pretty good. Avoided all the snow. In fact, I think we're having another snowstorm here this week that's just north of us, and my kids are kind of disappointed. But, you know, right now it's like 65 or so degrees outside and muggy as all get out. How's it down there?
It's about 75, and, you know, if the temperature gets below my age, I'm cold, so I'm glad to see the warmth.
You know, I'm getting there slowly but surely. I'm coming around to where you are. Well, look, tell us a little bit about, you're executive director of the Harry Hampton Foundation, and we're going to get to that in a minute, but who was Harry Hampton?
Harry Hampton was a newspaper columnist, famous for a column he wrote for the state in Columbia called Woods and Waters. He also authored a book called Woods and Waters and Other Aside. He was born in 1897. Harry was probably South Carolina's first true conservationist.
Okay.
He took it upon himself to really write and fight and argue and shout to get those in the legislature to take a look at what was happening with outdoor resources and start a conservation movement. He was really responsible for forming the South Carolina Wildlife Federation as we know it today, and as that president of that organization, he lobbied the legislature very tenaciously in order to get the South Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission formed in 1952, and that later became, of course, the Wildlife Department, and now the Department of Natural Resources as we know it today.
That is so interesting. I bet not many people in South Carolina know how DNR was started.
That's true. And, you know, in those days, we had, you've heard the term probably affectionately, rabbit sheriff.
Yes, sir.
That's basically what we had. There was a sheriff of outdoors, you know, and wildlife for the whole state. And he had virtually no one working with him. And so the commission was formed. And then Harry moved on to other battles. He fought to get the Congaree River Bottom established as a national monument back in 76, just before his death. And now it's a national park, which I'm sure he, his family, everyone is very proud of.
I'm sure they are. And I was looking just a little synopsis of him, and little paragraph says, once when Hampton was asked about what made him feel so personally responsible for the wild animals and places in South Carolina, he replied, just bullheadedness, I guess, is at the bottom of it.
Exactly, exactly. I think Nancy Wooten was interviewing Harry when he said that. Nancy used to be a writer with South Carolina Wildlife Magazine during my tenure with DNR and with the magazine, and wrote an article for us later on in years chronicling his life and the Hampton Fund, so we were very pleased with that.
Yeah, I bet you were. It just sounds like a man. When you shook his hand, you know his word was just as good as his handshake.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, give us a little bit of talk about what is the Harry Hampton Wildlife Foundation? What is it, the fund? What does it do?
Well, I'll tell you what. Our official name is the Harry R. E. Hampton Memorial Wildlife Fund Incorporated. We shorten that to just Hampton Wildlife Fund. We raise money for natural resources, particularly for the Department of Natural Resources, our primary partner in South Carolina. Those monies are raised at the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic, of course, the end of this month in
right.
Columbia. We have two upstate banquets, one in Spartanburg that's been going now for 30 years, one in Fort Mill that's approaching its 10th anniversary. We have one in Charleston that's been running for almost 20 years that we're trying to revive right now. And then we take contributions from the public. We handle funds that come to us, such as with the Sacrifice Mountain Project you're you're probably familiar with.
I am.
That BNR has partnered with us as the financial person involved, and then Duke Energy just recently gave a very sizable donation to get this project off the ground.
Yes, sir. I read about that.
We handle good. We handle projects like that. We built artificial reefs, such as the Bruce Rush artificial reef off of the Myrtle Beach area, and we were a primary partner in the South Carolina Deepwater Reef Project, Memorial Billfish Reef, the first of its kind, really on the East Coast, out in very deep water, and that project has been used as a model for others that are considering doing the same thing in other parts of the coastline, both in the Gulf and here on the East Coast. So we have so many things that I could tell you about, but I wanted to say that our primary focus is education of natural resources, the benefit of natural resources to us economically as well as aesthetically. And we have a lot of programs that we support through DNR for children, for ladies to get out in the outdoors, all types of events for those that are physically challenged. And we're just real proud of what we do. And our real top focus is this education of youth. And we give 7 scholarships amounting to $33,000 plus a year.
Right.
And we give, you might be interested in this, the only journalism scholarship, I believe, on the East Coast is the James O. Thomason, named for one of our past chairmen.
Yeah, I saw that in the, when you go to the Harry Hampton, it's actually www.hamptonwildlifefund.org. You go to their website, the tabs, they have the scholarships tab up there, and there's some really good scholarships there, to be honest with you.
Sir.
And well, I tell you, look at them, and all of them are geared towards, you know, the wildlife education, conservation side of things. And I wonder, oh man, oh, to do it all over again.
I know. Well, you know, and we partnered with the Guy Harvey Ocean Foundation. Everyone's familiar with Guy Harvey and his artwork.
Yes,
we
are.
A lot of people don't realize that the Guy Harvey Ocean Foundation supports a lot of programs and projects internationally. And we were able to get some money and offer a scholarship on the undergraduate level and our first graduate level, titled the Guy Harvey Ocean Foundation Scholarship for Excellence in Marine Science. So we're very proud that we can partner with them on that level.
Yeah, there was a news story just came out here last month that you donated $150,000 to DNR. And
yes, sir.
The total donated by Harry Hampton over the years now stands at a little over $3 million.
Yes, sir. And we, as I said, we are really in business, if you will, to give money to DNR to support projects that they can't fund through regular state appropriations. You know, in order to approach the South Carolina legislature for funding, you have to have legitimate reasons that benefit not only the citizens of the state, but the constituency of those legislators.
Right.
And some of those programs are just not looked upon with the same importance that we place on getting the kids into the outdoors to instill that South Carolina spirit of hunting and fishing tradition into our youth. We're losing hunters and anglers at a rapid pace, and we want to support programs that get people out there getting, using the resource and learning to respect and admire it.
Yeah, the Hooked on Fishing, Not on Drugs program, Take One, Make One, which we've done a lot of work with them. In fact, right now, Woods and Water, South Carolina, is with the help of some really great businesses in South Carolina collecting used hunting gear for the Take One, Make One program. You got the Archery in Schools program, which my youngest daughter Taylor is involved in and just having a wonderful time with. In fact,
wonderful.
The Upstate Hurricanes just qualified for states yesterday. I think the girls swept the girls division. I think the high school took first place. The middle school took second place in schools. So that is a great program, the Archery in Schools. The Shooting Sports Scholarships, those are all things y'all are involved in. trying to get youth involved in the outdoors.
That's exactly right. And you mentioned shooting sports. Archery in schools now falls under Lieutenant Billy Downer and the shooting sports program at BNR. They've now consolidated it. It will be a statewide event being held pretty soon over in Edgefield at the Wild Turkey Federation.
That's right.
Headquarters. And I'm real excited about that. And the great thing is we're seeing the schools embrace this. The kids are just enthralled and ecstatic about it. And being able to participate on a level where it's controlled and safe, and it gives the true story of firearm safety, and bow hunting and archery. It's just it's great to see these kids get involved, get off the computer a little while, get in the outdoors, and do something that way.
And it's positive.
I've
been amazed at going through as a parent in archery in schools. It's so much positive reinforcement. This is what you do. This is how you do it. These are the steps. These are the practice. It's not negative. It's all positive. And the kids, it comes across to the kids. Trust me, it does.
It does. And, I have to say, when you were saying that about it being positive, it just almost sends a chill through me, because it is positive. And one of the benefits that we've learned from teachers is that the cognitive and analytical skills required to compete transcend into the classroom, and these kids are using it to improve their grades and their attention span and their grasp on the subject matter by using those skills.
And you're not the first person I've heard that from. I had Ryan Bass here on the show with me last fall talking about both the NASP and the shooting sports, and he was saying the same thing, that there's a marked improvement in these kids who get involved in these outdoor activities in the classroom side of their lives.
Right.
That's the first segment. Did you catch, probably in his first sentence about Harry Hampton, that he used to write a column called Woods and Water? How cool was that? I had no idea. In fact, there's very little. I've tried to research about Harry Hampton. There's very little out there about him. But I'd love to try to find his book, maybe dig through the archives and find some of his articles, because it really sounds like, and you heard Jim, and it sounds like Jim's in the same vein about, protecting our wildlife, at the same time getting our kids and our younger generation involved in the outdoors, because we are declining in numbers. You heard him mention a little bit about the Sassafras Mountain Project. It's been in limbo for years because nobody, the different interests who own parts of that mountain couldn't get together. There was an article in the Greenville News from August of last year about the trees removed to improve the view at South Carolina's highest peak, which is Sassafras. Sassafras Mountain, if you don't know, is at 3,553 feet above sea level. It's here in South Carolina. It's the border along the Carolinas and the Eastern Continental Divide. It's been in limbo, but they've cleared off all the trees. And you heard Jim talk about it. If I can find it. I had it right here. It is. Duke Energy contributed $350,000 to construct the observation platform at the top of Sassafras Mountain. This was from February the 6th, DNR News blurb. Donation was presented on February the 6th at the Department of Natural Resources meeting in Columbia. There's lots more to go on up at Sassafras, but this is one of the purposes of Harry Hampton, the fund, is to get projects like this funded outside of what the legislature approves for the Department of Natural Resources. Come back, we're going to have the second part of this interview, and then we're going to get out some news and all that I've been waiting to talk about in the last segment. Hang with us. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Can't believe the blue sky out there. The sun's going to shine, and we're in here. And when I leave here, I have to go to an archery tournament shoot for Taylor, which is going to be fun. They're having their little in-house tournament tonight. That ought to be fun. But we've been listening to a segment I recorded with Jim Goller about the Harry Hampton Wildlife Fund and Memorial Wildlife Fund. And I happened to Google up and found a copy of Harry Hampton's column from October the 27th, 1949. And it's kind of interesting because of some of the things that Jim was talking about. It says a claim by Chief State Game Warden A.A. Richardson that his department should be credited with aiding in the quail raising program in Spartanburg County has been discounted by Edwin W. Johnson, Secretary of the County Wildlife Association. This claim and answer has been published in Harry Hampton's Woods and Water column in the state paper. And it goes on, Mr. Richardson's letter, quoted by Mr. Hampton as follows. I read with much interest in your Woods and Waters column in the state of Sunday, October the 16th, under the caption of Spartanburg's Fine Exhibit. And he goes on to say, I'm much interested and highly in favor, but the credit for this program of raising quail was made possible by the State Game and Fish Department, who furnished them with the amount of $8,789.74 for purchase of quail for brood stock and equipment such as incubator and other things necessary. Mr. Johnson disputed that, wrote Mr. Hampton, and said, not one penny of that money came from the State Game Department. That money came from Spartanburg County's share of the hunting license fund and was appropriated by our own delegation on its own recommendation. I drew the petitions and had them circulated, and it was as a result of these petitions signed by our delegation that we spent our own money. Oh, me. So there's, from 1949, Harry Hampton's Woods and Water column, which is really cool. Anyway, let's go back, listen to the second part, and we're going to break right after the second part, come back for the final segment, and have some news.
Well, that's all good, but we got something coming up here in the state, which is probably our premier outdoor event, the Palmetto Sportsman's Classic. This is the 31st year of it?
Yes, sir, it is, and I've been there every year, all 31.
Wow, you're a veteran.
I am. I'm a true veteran. I was director of the show for about 7 years, but this is a great event. I have to take a moment and thank a couple of people.
Sure.
Number one, my chairman, Dr. Julius L. Leary from Greenwood, OBGYN, everybody affectionately calls him Juki. Juki has been a great advocate for me and for the resources of South Carolina, and we have 14 other board members that serve. They will all be there and supportive of the classic. We have a booth, number one, in the Candy Building.
Okay.
And we encourage everyone to come out. This event, we call it the largest event in South Carolina, but truly it's the largest event probably on the East Coast now that Harrisburg, Pennsylvania is kind of regrouping.
Right.
And certainly we're the largest in the Southeast. We have people from all over the world that come in, outfitters from foreign nations,
right,
as well as Canada and Alaska, other states, you know, all across the country come in. We've got top-of-the-line entertainment plan for everyone. Our headliner this year is Captain Wild Bill from the Discovery Channel's hit show Deadliest Catch.
Yes, sir.
We have Kip Campbell, Marty Fisher. Kip is, of course, on the Outdoor Channel's Red Arrow TV.
And right.
Marty Fisher, probably one of the best duck callers you'll ever want to meet. And my old buddy Joey Mines, host of Outdoors with Joey Mines, will be there with seminars, and we have the bathtub, and we've just got a little bit of everything. And when people come, we want them to know that when they come through that gate, they're going to park for free. They're going to come in for one admission, other than food and what they buy to take home with them. They can do everything for free,
which is important these days with families and the rising cost of everything else. You know, admission for adults is $8, senior military,
yep,
$7, children 10 and under, free, and parking's,
yes, sir,
free.
Yes,
all it takes is getting to the state fairgrounds in Columbia.
Yes, sir, that's right, that's right. We don't know what it'll be like next year. There's some construction going out there on a new building, and I'm sure it'll be part of our, of course, we occupy every building out there as well as all of the outdoors, so we'll have that building too. And they're talking about a little increase in the fairgrounds, so we might have to go up just a touch to keep up with inflation.
Sure.
But all the events will still be free. And speaking of events and kids,
yes,
we've got that one of the most popular things is that it's called the Kids Discovery Dig.
Yes.
there's a big sand pile, and these kids get in and dig up fossils and shark's teeth and rocks and shells and things, and they just really get into it. Also, they can troop on outside, and we've got a catch and release fishing pond teaching the ethics of fishing, and aquatic education runs that. And you mentioned Take One, Make One. Their trailer will be there with fishing simulator, air rifle, and electronic shooting, and the junior game warden booth where they can have their picture taken behind the costume and wow. meet all the guys.
So yeah.
They can even pan for gold if they want to while they're there at classes.
Very cool. And that's one thing I've always noticed about the classes. There's plenty for kids to do.
Yes, sir.
If you as an adult, you know, it may or may not be your cup of tea, but the kids there, besides all that you mentioned, there's one thing that every kid down there will just love, and that's dogs.
Exactly.
There will be Labrador Retriever demonstrations. I know last year there were probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 of the booths that I went around, just had a lab laying around somewhere. And, of course, as soon as the kids come by, oh, Daddy, I want to pet the dog, and they're all just laying there just eating it up.
Exactly, exactly. And we do have caution people coming. When they hear that we have so many dogs, they want to bring their own, but we don't allow that.
That's
we had
right.
a little incident a few years ago, so we have to put safety first. But we do encourage them to come, and please don't leave those dogs out in the car, certainly in the heat.
That's right. We're going to have booths full of vendors. I know last year I picked up a little recipe for club crackers, and that was really good as just a party appetizer, so you're going to have food. Vendors with all game calls, camouflage, products you can buy, T-shirts. It's a shoulder-to-shoulder experience, too. There's lots of people there.
It is. You've been in the candy building at the height of the show, I understand, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. How many people are going to go through this during the weekend, do you think?
I think conservatively in the 40,000 range. Over the 3 days of the event, and each year it seems to get a little bigger. I tell you one thing that really does my heart good each year. As I said, I took over this show when I was with DNR. I retired in 03, but I ran the show for a little over 7 years. And when I took it over, it was kind of a turkey hunter show.
Okay.
A lot of game calls and so forth. A lot of hardcore hunters came, some families. But I said, I'm out to change that. I want more fishing. I want more outdoor activities. I want to do things for the kids. So we partnered with the DNR Education Department and got things going. And we even had Danny Ford out, who was an advisory chairman for DNR, hammering birdhouses together 1 year. So we've got a long history with that. But what does my heart good is I look, like on Sunday afternoons, and the baby strollers are shoulder to shoulder.
Right.
To see the kids out and the families all together. And I've had surveys done at the classic exit that shows that we have third generation families. They've been coming since they were kids, and then parents, and then even grandparents.
Wow.
So over that 31 year history, that's a lot to be proud of. It's a rite of passage for kids in spring now.
That's it. I can remember taking my nieces when they were just really small to the classic, and then my kids have been. So, yeah, we're in second generation of my family.
Good, good. And you can probably hear the excitement in my voice.
I mean, I can.
I am so proud of this, and I have to say Denise Frost, the classic director, has just done a wonderful job working with Steve Bates, formerly an education section chief with DNR, who is now retired and working for us to help recruit some of our people in. They have done a yeoman's job. We just have, I think, one of the best of events that anyone could enjoy, and they don't have to hunt or fish. There's a lot
That's
more
right.
than that.
That's there. Exactly right. It's just the outdoors, just getting about getting out there. Yeah, Denise did a good job. In fact, she sold me a booth this year.
Well, we may have to do something about that.
Oh, no, I don't mind it at all. I'm looking forward to being there. This will be my first year behind the table promoting the radio show. I'm going to be there with one of my sponsors, Outdoor Underwriters, and I'm excited to be there. Be there Friday and Saturday all day. So I look forward to meeting you there.
Anything else you want to say in closing?
Only that I have to thank all of the folks in South Carolina that have supported the Hampton Fund and all of our endeavors. And rest assured, their dollars go to great causes to introduce people to the outdoors, as well as help solidify those outdoors are available for them, for their children, and their children's children in the future. That's all what we are here to do.
And I'm 100% behind that. Absolutely 100%. Mr. Goler, I appreciate you coming on the show. I look forward to meeting you at the Classic this year.
And as I do you.
Yes, and I'd love to have you back on the show later on to talk about some of the other things the Harry Hampton Fund does in South Carolina.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'll be more than happy to at any time, and I look forward to perhaps sitting down with you at the Classic.
I look forward to that, too. You have a good day, and I appreciate this.
Thank you, Roger.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
And we're back with the final segment of Woods and Water, South Carolina, for this Saturday. I hope you enjoyed that segment, or those two segments. I hope it came across to me when you talked to Mr. Goler where his heart is in relation to our South Carolina outdoors. I think it's the same place mine is. It's the same place a lot of you listening, where your hearts are too. Encourage you to go down to the Classic. And my mind just went totally blank on that one. So I looked outside and figured out what I could do this afternoon. But it really is. It's a family-oriented time. Hope you'll be there. But I, as much as I'm looking forward to meeting Wild Bill Rokoski, I'm looking forward to meet Jim Goler too. His poured his efforts, his heart for the last few years into this thing, and I want to see it succeed. We'll have him back on. We'll talk about some of the events they have going on where you can go contribute at one of their banquets or through their website. And while we're speaking of contributions, and if your head has been under a rock, you don't know what month of the year it is, we're about 4 weeks away from the tax deadline. Yes, everybody knows about it. Everybody's just having as much fun as I am, I'm sure. Here in the state of South Carolina, we have a Check for Wildlife campaign that was started back in 1981 to help raise funds to manage our Heritage Trust properties and fund programs for the Department of Natural Resources that don't have to come through the legislature. As with most governments, they've got their minds elsewhere and not on what most of the people would like for their minds to be on. So we have this tax checkoff. Started in 1981. In 1995, we changed it to the Endangered Wildlife Fund. And I'm reading here from a press release from the director of the DNR, Alvin Taylor, that says, you know, donations to the Endangered Wildlife Fund received through it have been instrumental in success stories such as the comeback of the bald eagle. And he gives a stat in here. I think our bald eagle population has gone from about 27 or 30 nesting pairs. Here we go. Thanks to your generous support, the number of bald eagles in South Carolina has increased from 13 nesting pairs to 237 nesting pairs. That's through the Endangered Wildlife Fund checkoff on the South Carolina state tax return. They have this year another checkoff, which is the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources Fund. And all funds help support the mission of the Department of Natural Resources through enhancement of programs and operations of the overall agencies. This doesn't have to go into the big pot and then get redistributed. This goes straight to the Department of Natural Resources. So when you do your tax returns this year, the form, if you really want to know it, is an I-330 form. Line 1 is the Endangered Wildlife Fund. Line 16 is the Department of Natural Resources Fund. I encourage you, you know, yeah, $10 from you is not going to make much difference. But $10 from you and $10 from 1,000 other people or 10,000 other people across the state will make a lot of difference and will help fund programs like the National Archery and School Program, the Scholastic Shooting Sports Program, the fishing rodeos that are free that are starting to come up this spring. Some of those programs didn't get these kids back in. They maintain facilities. There's always maintenance to do in the outdoors because, hey, it's outdoors. But anyway, I encourage you this year when you're doing your tax returns, check off on your South Carolina state return, and you will see the benefits if you're in the outdoors. Going from that, we go to something that's kind of close to my heart, and you hear that and you say, oh no, what's he about to talk about now? Purple Martins. You know, when I was growing up, my grandparents lived in Lexington, South Carolina, and one of my duties during the summertime was to protect the purple martin gourds that my granddaddy had out next to his automotive shop. And I ran across this article and I said, wow, this is really cool. It's timely. It's a little off the beaten path of woods and water, but it's for our outdoor resources. And in the article, it comes from the National Wildlife Federation. It's about, if you want to know more about purple martins, it's www.purplemartin.org. But it's become a purple martin landlord, declining over parts of their range. These insect-eating wing tenants need nest boxes now more than ever. And it talks about, and you can actually go on a tour, but the article starts out, on a sultry summer evening, more than 24 boats are anchored off a small island in Lake Murray, not far from Columbia, South Carolina. Their passengers are waiting to see one of the nature's most amazing avian spectacles, a gathering of huge numbers of purple martins at a post-breeding roost. At first, only a handful of the dark, long-winged birds twitter high above the boats. Then, as the sun begins to set, their numbers build dramatically until tens of thousands of martins are circling over the island. The birds move in formation, says Sarah Green, Director of Education in the South Carolina Wildlife Federation. It almost looks like a dance. Precisely at dusk, she explains, the clouds of martins will fly down all at once and land on the island's trees and bushes. When they leave in the morning, the flocks are big enough so they can be seen on radar. Lake Murray's purple martin roost is the largest in the country. Though numbers vary from year to year, a survey conducted in the mid-90s estimated that more than 700,000 of the birds were descending on the 12-acre island each evening during late July and early August. Similar but smaller roosts are scattered across the country, including sizable ones in Virginia, Tennessee, Nebraska. After martins migrate to their winter range in Brazil, they again gather in large roosts, often settling down in the night in towns and cities. Purple martins have a long association with people, all the way back to the Native Americans who hung hollowed-out gourds for the birds to use for nesting. European colonists quickly adopted the practice. Eventually, someone developed nest boxes with multiple compartments for these social birds, and the idea spread. A writing from John James Audubon back in 1831 said almost every country tavern has a martin house. Today, more than 1 million people in the United States and Canada are purple martin landlords who put up nest boxes or gourds for the birds on their property. And it goes on to say, martin populations are down. Fewer and fewer people are putting up their nesting habitats every year. And all this is an effort to get more people involved. You've ever been in Tractor Supply, you've seen the white houses, Lowe's has them, or you've seen the white gourds. They're easy to put up, and this article is going to conclude with how you can do it. If you live in an area where purple martins breed and decide to put up a nest box, you have a good chance of attracting the birds. And I checked, there have been 52 sightings across South Carolina of scouts. Purple martins, before the main body comes in, scouts, kind of like crows, they come into an area and scout out, and they'll go back to the main flock and bring them in to where they have found places to nest. The species seems to like being close to humans, says Larry Melcher, a purple martin landlord in Shepherdsville, Kentucky. They don't even mind urban environments, adds Melcher, who oversees 40 gourds on the grounds of the Ford Motor Company plant. He said trucks come in and out all day, but it doesn't seem to bother the birds. Like many people, he got involved in birds as a child when his father put up a martin box in their backyard. Today, in addition to caring for the birds where he works, he's got martin houses as his home, and in spare time he gives talks to aspiring landlords. If you attract martins the first year, you can always expand later, he said, so start out small. Location's very important. Needs to be 50 feet away from trees. Of course, wide open spaces are the best. He says, don't place the houses or gourds too low. They need to be 12 to 15 feet high. Remove vines and shrubs from the area directly underneath the nest box. Another important thing to do is to keep house sparrows and starlings from nesting in martin houses. And see, that was my job during the summers in Lexington, was to keep the sparrows from the purple martin gourds and the houses, which meant that I get to get out the little BB gun and try my best to hit one. So you need to keep them free of that. Also, it's a good idea to have a predator guard around the base of the pole. You know, raccoons and all are not going to climb a small pole, but a snake can. He said, keep your birds safe. If you have any, you know, if you've seen purple martins, they're fun to watch. They're, you know, they say they eat over a million mosquitoes. There have been studies that say they don't eat any mosquitoes, so who knows? But anyway, they're fun to have around. They come back year after year, and they need our help. So if you're interested in that, purplemartin.org, find out more about it, and have some fun with bird habitat this year. And I'm looking forward to this. This next article is about a book that's coming out by Dr. Scott Sampson, How to Raise a Wild Child, The Art of Science of Falling in Love with Nature. It's coming out on March the 24th, and he's been sending out a few blurbs here and there about things that the top nature mentoring tips, and this one's number 8, Nature Connection is a Contact Sport. His tip goes like this. Too often these days, children's encounters with nature are dominated by a look but don't touch directive. Fearing that we must protect nature and our kids at all costs, we often do far more harm than good. Nature connection depends on firsthand, multi-sensory encounters. It's a messy, dirty business. Picking leaves and flowers, turning over rocks, holding wiggling worms, splashing in ponds. Lacking such experiences, children's growth is impoverished and they're unlikely to care for, let alone protect, natural places. So loosen up and find some hands-on nature experiences for your kids in life. Rather than telling your kids no all the time when they want to climb a tree, throw a rock, or step into a muddy pond, take a deep breath and offer words of encouragement. Don't worry so much about the dirt and scrapes. Clothes and bodies can be washed and cuts heal. Most of the time, kids don't need to be shown how to connect with nature. It's ingrained in their DNA. Rather than seeing nature connection as something you need to teach young children, the real key is simply to take them outside and let them do what comes naturally. At least on occasion, seek out some wilder places where kids can go off-trail and bushwhack a little. Nature connection is a contact sport, and nature can take it. And if you listened last week to Dan and Rebecca and Cody talking about Cam Wildwood, that's one of the things that they do. It is a dirty week, but it's meant to be. You know, and if you look at a kid who is filthy and dirty and muddy, at least before he comes into your house, he's all smiles. And look, if they try to do something, of course, now here's with a grain of salt. If they try to do something, and it's not life-threatening, but it may hurt them, I always take the advantage, and I've always told my wife, look, if it hurts too much, they'll never do it again. You know, let them experience these things. Too often we try to protect them from everything around them, when actually a little bit of contact sports with nature is a good thing. So I hope you take that. He's got another one here that's pretty good. For young children, it might be the local park, the schoolyard, or backyard. Even a few minutes a day is a great start. Chances are you and your kids will quickly discover that there's far more to see and do more than imagined. Most children will have no problem engaging with their natural surroundings. Their curious minds are built to do just that. So get them out there. Introduce the next generation to the outdoors. And with that, we're about done. Chuck Norris for this week. We want to wish a happy birthday. And I guess since I'm still alive, Chuck is okay with me being a few days late. Happy 75th birthday to Chuck Norris this past week. And Chuck, he doesn't blow out his birthday candles. They surrender their flames voluntarily. Registration is open for summer camps. If you missed last week, we talked to the guys from Camp Wildwood. Next Saturday, we're going to be talking to Bo Mongold with Clemson's Youth Learning Institute camps. Do you remember how much you look forward to the week at camp and how much fun they always were? Well, it's time to pass that along to yours or some other kid who doesn't know the whole world of experiences wrapped up in just 1 week of summer. If you missed last week's show, you can listen to the podcast on the website, woodsandwatersc.com. In the next few weeks, we'll also be talking with Carrie and Jay from Glendale Outdoor Leadership School about their new week-long camp and their summer day camps. These aren't the only places kids can spend a week of summer, so I want to encourage you, find a camp near you. And like Dan said last week, see the changes that take place in just a week away from all the technology that kids don't think they can live without. As you heard today, we also got the Sportsman's Classic coming up the end of this month. Wild Bill, food, vendors, all the booths. I'll be there. Hope to see you there. Can't you see the sun? We're going to have some goodies to give away, and we're going to have a cool-looking booth. Working on that right now. So anyway, make plans to get outside. Get those kids out there. Let them get dirty. Take the back ridge when you can. Don't forget the camera. And I will talk to you again next week.